Today is Thursday, March 26th, 2020. This is a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Gail Nielsen, G-A-I-L-N-I-E-L-S-E-N. My name is Tom Martin, and this is a telephone interview. Good afternoon, Gail. How are you?
Just fine, thank you, Tom.
It's good to hear your voice. Would you mind if we record this interview over the telephone?
No, this is fine, Tom. Just go ahead and record.
Thank you. Gail, what year were you born?
I was born 17 August, 1927.
Okay. Where? Where were you born?
Provo, Utah.
Okay. What were your folks doing in Provo?
Mother and father were living in Heber City, and during the birth of myself and my siblings, she'd come to Provo to a home for those that are having birth.
Oh, okay. What was your mom's name? Thank you. And your father?
My father's name was Morris Warner Evans.
Okay.
And there was a divorce, and she later, after 12 years about, until 19... 40s when she married Reuben Wester Nielsen.
How do you spell Reuben's name?
The simple way, R-U-B-E-N.
Okay. Because some folks would put an E in there, an extra E.
Yes.
Huh, R-U-B-E-N. Okay, Reuben, sorry, what was Reuben's middle name?
Wester.
How did they...
W-E-S-T-E-R.
How did Reuben meet Beth?
Well, he met her in Centerfield, Utah, the time we were living on the farm of my grandparents.
Okay. And is that where you grew up then, was Centerfield?
Primarily, yes.
Okay. And that was on a farm? Were you helping with the raising of the livestock and such?
Yes. And during crop times, yes.
Okay. And where did you end up going to school?
Well, I went to the different schools, Centerfield Public Schools, Benison Valley High School, Manti High School, and North Sevier High School for graduation.
Okay.
During the year of 1945, I graduated from Brigham Young University and majored in mathematics and chemistry, but primarily in geology.
Okay. Okay, so let's see, 27, 37, 47. So you would have been 18 then when you went into BYU, is that about right?
No, I was in the service from 46 through early 1948.
Okay. And can you tell me about that time in the service?
Repeat that one.
Can you tell me about your time in the service?
I spent about 4 months in the Merchant Marines and 13, let's see. Well, 13 months in the Army.
Okay.
I'm a veteran of World War II during the occupation.
Okay, so did you actually go to Europe then?
I spent 13 months in Japan.
Okay. And this would have been after the atomic bomb, is that right?
Yes, that was, of course, way after, in 46, 47, after 41, when the bombs.
Okay. By this time, let's see, so you came back from service from Japan in 48. Would you have then gone to BYU after that, do you think?
Yes, I went to the fall of 48 to BYU through 52.
Okay. Had you been into southern Utah by that time? Okay.
BYU during those years.
All right.
But did visit southern Utah. Primarily because I got a job while I was visiting Height with my folks who were living there at that time.
When did your folks move to Height?
During the middle 40s.
Okay. At that time in the middle 40s, Arth Chafin was running the ranch there, wasn't he?
It was property owned by Arth Chafin.
Okay. What do you remember your first recollections of meeting Arth?
Just meeting him during the time I was working at the Height reduction plant, uranium reduction plant.
Okay.
He was quite a greedy sort of a person.
Tell me more.
I really can't go much beyond that.
Okay.
Except he worked, my stepfather worked for him because he was an excellent mechanic and could take care of the equipment.
Oh, okay. All right. Can you tell me everything you remember about how the Height ferry worked?
Make some guesstimates on it.
Okay.
Primarily, it was a wooden structured ferry, but heavily wood product made, and probably made out of I don't know, probably made by eights. I don't know, but they were brought in. I'm sure this Arth Chafin brought in enough for it would float and carry small trucks.
Okay.
As well as passenger cars and passengers. And the Model A Ford was attached to it. One rear wheel was attached to in a circular loop around the drum of the
Okay.
That pole is along the cable, which was extended across the river.
Okay. So I was confused because I was thinking that the Model A ran a little paddle wheel. No. Okay.
No.
So.
No, like I mentioned, this cable run around that drum of the Ford.
Okay.
Rear wheel.
Okay.
And of course, with the speed, you know, you could accelerate, but it was a fairly slow journey across the river.
Yeah.
In the low gear.
Right.
Always low gear.
Okay. Absolutely. All right, so it would be sort of a first gear kind of thing, and would you actually sort of push the clutch and
yes.
put it in gear and then let the clutch out slow and start
yes.
taking off?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm assuming there would have been some cables going up to pulleys and a main cable that would sort of hold the whole ferry there. Okay.
Any support other than that cable, but the Model A Ford was on the south side.
Okay.
On the ferry, and I don't remember any cable, so I can only assume that all the force was controlled by the force of that cable around that. Drum the car.
Uh-huh. Okay. I was just going on photos,
what?
Which I was just going by photographs that
yes.
that showed this kind of main cable, and then...
But there might have been another support cable. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure either. But anyway, did you get a chance to operate that ferry when you
no.
were there?
No.
Your dad was doing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
As well as our early years when Arthur would operate the ferry.
Gail, when you came out there to Height, were you expecting to get a job at the uranium reduction plant?
Perhaps.
Okay.
But it was a marvelous summer to be able to work there a full summer.
And this was 1952?
I'm not just sure what year it was. 51, 52, or 50, 1950, or 1949. No, I think that's it, 50, 51, 52.
Okay. What do you remember about that?
But probably not 52.
Okay.
Well, are you talking about the plant or the ferry?
The plant, the people, where did you stay? What did you do on your days off, if you had any? Just everything.
Well, basically, during those times on the working days, I was at the plant working. I don't remember days off.
Okay.
I can relate a little bit about the procedures that I was working at the plant, if that's what you want.
Oh, sure.
This reduction of uranium and copper was very similar to what goes on in Bingham Canyon.
Okay, where the big smelter is.
Yes.
Okay.
But there's no heating process. It was acid reduction or base type formulas that in the process.
Okay, had you studied some of that in school?
Well, a little, but not extensively.
Okay.
But actually working as you learn it.
Yeah, okay.
But I primarily on my work was on the container that reduced copper.
Okay.
And of course they drop iron material, pieces of iron, similar to like tin can type material, into this solution, which was a sulfuric acid solution that dissolved uranium and copper into the solution.
Okay.
So it took out, I don't know the percentage, but it took most of the copper and uranium into solution.
So would they precipitate out, or were you trucking out the reduced ore as a liquid?
Dropping that iron into that container.
Yep.
Precipitated the copper.
Okay.
And it would flow over onto another container, but it had a canvas top.
Okay.
It was sort of like a baking pan, circular baking pan.
Okay.
And the solution would go right through the canvas because it was neutralized. Let's see. Well, the copper would be out, but then it'd still be acid solution, sulfuric acid solution. And then that copper would precipitate out again on top of that canvas, and then they'd literally just scoop the copper and remove it into containers that would be shipped out and sold.
Okay. For further refining?
Yes.
Okay.
But that process is, again, is similar to what goes on at Bingham.
And there's
east of Salt Lake there.
There's also a uranium mill at Blanding.
I'm not sure of anything at Blanding. I knew there was one at Moab.
Okay, yes, there certainly was one in Moab for a while.
I don't know of anything except maybe mining at Blanding.
Okay.
But the river don't go to Blanding.
No, but that there's a uranium mill. It's been there a long time. But that's okay, not to worry. I'm assuming you guys had a crusher there, is that right? Did you crush that ore down?
I think there was a secondary crusher that ground it into sand texture.
Yeah, all right.
The primary crusher was, it came in that form. But I wasn't at all acquainted with any of the crushing.
Okay, all right. How many?
Now that sulfuric acid solution carrying the now iron oxide and uranium oxide flows into another big container again, and then a basic type material was used to neutralize that acid.
Okay.
And when that occurred, out comes the iron.
All right. Oh, so the iron was kind of going right back in again. It would come out and go back in?
Well, it's iron oxide in solution.
Oh, okay. All right. I was just thinking about the a couple steps before where you put the iron in the acid reduction and then you precipitate it out. But
it only precipitates out after you use this basic material to bring out the iron oxide.
Okay, all right.
And it went into some kind of a containers that would squeeze out this basic solution with the uranium
mm-hmm.
oxide.
Okay.
And I've kind of forgot how say there was another solution change, made it more basic, I think, more basic, while the other was just a neutral,
okay,
basic material, and then it put that uranium into uranium oxide and precipitated out, and then those particles would go into a frame-like structure that was rectangular, but square, rectangular, but they were sort of a press,
okay,
type thing, and it'd squeeze out the juices. And of course, it would just run into the river.
Okay. All right.
That whole plant was electrified by and energized with electric, with a big engine that generated the power for the plant.
Like a big diesel generator?
No, it was a gasoline powered motor with a generator.
Okay. How many people work there?
I really don't know. I don't think it exceeded 8 or 10.
Oh, so pretty small.
Yeah, it was. They didn't need too many people.
Okay.
It's just a matter of just opening valves to let it go from one big container into another one.
Okay. But it sounds like it was kind of dangerous work because of the acid and the basic liquids. Those are kind of dangerous, so.
Well, there's no way I would be jumping in these vats, that's for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. Do you remember anything about anybody that you worked with?
No.
Okay.
No, I remember names way back then, but I really don't remember any.
And were you staying with your mom and dad then?
I was staying with my mother and dad on the west side of the river.
So you'd have to cross the river to go to work then.
I literally had to go across on a ferry.
Okay, so you took the ferry across to go to work.
Yes.
Wow, you actually commuted to work every day across the ferry.
Well, yes. There was a short time there where the river was really low. I just literally swam the river.
Was the water warm?
Well, 75 to 80.
That's nice.
When it's that low, it run warmer.
Could you just wade across, or did you actually have to swim?
No, there was a lot of wading, yes, but the main current, you'd have to swim across.
Okay. Nice.
As I swam across from that location where my folks stayed, I'd be swimming across and downstream somewhat.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That sounds wonderful. So you'd have a little bath on the way home.
Yes.
Nice. What do you remember about your house there, your mom and dad's house?
Well, literally back in those days, the expense of construction was quite expensive, and for my father and my mother, they couldn't afford to build a house at that time.
Okay.
And all the time that they lived there, they lived in tent houses.
Okay.
Two or three tent houses.
Yeah, yeah, like a large tent that had a hole in the side of it for a wood stove opening, for a stove pipe.
Yes, but there was only one that had any heating.
Okay. And then did they have crops?
Finishing out this uranium process, that liquid, which was somewhat basic, they squeezed the liquid out, and again it flowed in the river, and then they'd open up those frames and extract the uranium oxide out, and put in 30-gallon barrels.
Okay.
And those 30-gallon barrels would be shipped to probably over to Moab or whoever, or planning whoever for further reduction to U-203 was the cornotite, and then U-305 or something was the in a plutonium form. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
About the chemistry of it.
Okay.
You can look that one up.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So it sounds like it was quite the concentrator, reduction, as you say, to take a lot of material and really refine it down.
Again, I wouldn't be able to let you know about any of that. I didn't get any further than knowing that iron oxide was a precipitate that went into those flames, and then they extracted out and put it in those barrels.
And all the rest of the liquid and the waste, the rock waste, did that just then go into the river? Or were there tailings there? Was there a tailings pond there?
Tailings would stay in the original big bin, or the big original one that had the sulfuric acid in it. And then they'd have to remove that by forklift or some kind of a way of taking it and dumping it on the pile.
Okay.
Refuse pile. But it only stayed in that one container.
All right.
And then again, like I mentioned, the copper and the uranium are in solution. But the process, you can probably look it up how they do that in the Bingham location.
Yeah. Gail, where was the mine that was feeding you guys the ore?
The primary mine was up at the Happy Jack mine up White Canyon.
Okay.
And it was some miles up where they truck us down, or they truck it to the primary crushers, and then again they truck it down and run it through the secondary crushers.
Hmm.
But all I remember is the sand.
Okay, okay.
So where the crushers were, I couldn't tell you.
All right, they might have been up at the mine even.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, they could have been on site, but they sure would have made a lot of noise. Yeah, huh.
I don't think I'd want to breathe that. That cornotite.
No, not sure.
Pitch blend.
Yep, that's right. It's pretty tough on your lungs, that stuff. What do you remember about the farm that Reuben and Beth were running?
Well, they bought 3 acres of that from Arthur Chaffin.
Okay.
Primarily garden and fruit trees.
Okay. What kind of fruit trees?
Well, apple, peach.
Okay.
Mainly.
Watermelons?
Yeah, they produce a lot of different melons, yes.
Okay.
Excellent place to grow, like the Garden of Eden on melons.
Nice. Nice.
They grew a lot of, and there was, what is that fruit with a little seedy looking? Pomegranates, that's what that is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they grew nice big pomegranates.
Nice. Those are pretty, well, they're kind of labor intensive, but they sure are sweet.
Yeah.
And grapes?
Jelly.
Yeah, were they growing grapes? Wow. Were they trucking this out to Moab and other places to sell?
I think that all of it was hauled in to height, and they just processed it. But I can only just assume there might have been some of that Happy Jack going back to Moab, but I think they just literally hauled from the closest to those kind of
Oh, so you think that the food your mom and dad were growing actually went up to the mines?
I thought you were still talking about...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I apologize. No,
well,
they
mostly give away the types of fruit to people that come down the river on those boating trips and shared.
Huh. Did you get a chance to...
They didn't sell much.
Okay. All right. So basically, their bread and butter then was the ferry.
Oh, the bread and butter was the ferry.
Okay.
Working at the ferry.
All right. Do you remember how much it cost to get across there?
I've completely forgotten.
All right.
But I'll bet there was a lot of $5 bills went.
Well, good. Good. Did you get a chance to meet any of those river running people? Well, that wouldn't have been Harry Aleson, was it?
Maybe, I don't know.
Did he have a goatee?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Okay. All right. Who else? Do you remember the Porters, the Porter family? Were they there?
Yes.
What do you remember about them?
I did meet him, and he was kind of out of it.
Oh, okay.
But she was the one that kind of ruled the roost.
Okay.
I've kind of forgot her name, but there was a daughter there that lived there too.
Okay. All right.
But that was a very short time.
Hmm. Okay. And
the housing was very, very poor for them.
Yeah, it sounds like the housing was kind of poor for everybody.
Yeah, of course, that Chaffin, he built quite a cabin type structure.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay. And
I don't ever remember him renting out.
Hmm.
More than just him and this wife of his.
Okay. Was there a store there?
There was never a store that I ever remember in the height location. There was one at the White Canyon.
Okay. Who ran the store at White Canyon?
I really don't know.
Okay. What do you remember about the store there?
I didn't really go to it.
Okay.
When I went over there, I was over there just to go to work and then back over across the river.
Okay. As to working back. All right. When
there was a sort of a tent structure in White Canyon there where the mill was, but I never stayed at that location. I visited, but never stayed there. Many of those workers, they did sleep overnight at that tent location.
Oh, okay. So the workers stayed on the White Canyon side?
White Canyon side.
All right. And at what point did you realize there was going to be a dam built downstream?
Well, basically during those years, during the college years and later on, everything was just written in newspapers, so I just really didn't get too much on that information myself, I was just sorry to see the river go with that big lake formed in there.
What?
I can see the necessity of it, being able to release water according to what was needed in California and Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Nevada.
Yeah. Do you think your parents shared that sentiment?
I do.
Okay. Did they ever talk about it?
No. Not much, no.
Okay.
But Leslie had her opinion on it. You'd have to ask her.
Well, she does, and Leslie being your daughter, and we both agree on that, but asking you is more important because you were there. Yeah, well, she definitely got some great stories too. What else?
One other sister, Wanda, did work for a short time at the mine at location at Height, but I really didn't delve into much on her labors there.
She was your sister? Okay, and she worked for your mom and dad?
No, worked for the mill.
Oh, okay.
We all visited a lot of relatives on the, a lot of my mother's relatives visited Height, and they enjoyed the fruit and the trip, the sights.
I bet.
And as far as the geology is concerned, it was primarily just that Triassic and the Navajo sandstone. What was in there was the Wingate in Jurassic time.
Okay. Okay.
And Kopi and Chinle, which was the most interesting slope forming formation with all that petrified wood.
Yes. Was there some of that around White Canyon? Okay.
Leslie, she still got a chunk of it there. You never would be able to lift it. you'd be lucky to be able to lift it with a crowbar.
Oh my gosh. Huh?
She'll tell you all about that one.
Okay. She was just sending me pictures of a place called Moki Fort.
Well, that's true. And now this Moki Fort was obviously a lookout point for the for those pre-Indian times.
Uh-huh.
And during the late times, of course, it pretty well dilapidated that structure.
It did. I saw that. She sent me that picture. It was heartbreaking.
You might have saw some of Leslie's pictures of it.
Yes.
But the irony is that it was located approximately 80 feet above the river level.
Okay.
So that indicates that up and down, I would say that river was, at that location, was about that deep.
Okay. Right. Yeah, and it's been dropping since, so I'm kind of wondering. Did you ever get around and see any other Indian ruins like that?
No.
Okay.
No, no.
Did you ever do any flying in that country?
No.
Okay.
Leslie did a little bit, but not much.
Okay.
She met a flyer that worked up northeast. That area, I think, was government-related.
Okay. Where did you, after you worked at the mill, where did you go from there?
Well, during the summers, I went on other different jobs, but it was just that one summer that I spent down there.
Okay. Did you ever get a chance to boat down the river below height?
No, but I did boat 5 miles down from the bridge location with some driftwood with my father. We just tied it together with ropes and drifted down the river to height and utilized the driftwood for fuel.
Oh, that's nice. So this was from the ferry. Did you build a little boat there at the ferry and then go on downstream?
I never went downstream.
Oh, okay. So where was the bridge?
The bridge location now is about 5 miles upriver from the White Canyon height location.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're talking about the bridge that they built when they built the dam.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So this would have been before the dam backed the water up in there that you guys floated down?
No, this is just that one summer that I was working at that reducing plant.
Mm-hmm.
We went up, literally just walked up.
Did you? Okay.
And then just floated down.
Oh, that's fun.
Just carried some rope and...
Uh-huh. So that would have been up near the Dirty Devil, the mouth of the Dirty Devil there, Escalante coming in?
That's correct, yes. That's where that bridge location is.
Nice. That's pretty country.
Yeah, interesting geology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's one formation there at the base of the river there called the Cutler Formation.
That's where the uranium was in, is that right?
No.
No, okay. Okay.
Wrangling my mind to remember the name of it.
Yeah, I can't remember it either. Do you have a sense of how many people might have crossed that ferry that were either river people or people just tourists or people just traveling? Was it once a day or a couple times a day or...
going across the river.
Okay.
I really wasn't too much aware of much of it going on.
Hmm. Okay.
But I'm sure there's a lot. People sightseeing primarily.
And Leslie mentioned there was a little journal or a register where you'd write in who was crossing. Do you remember that?
I guess my folks had kind of a little bit of a register, but she would be more knowledgeable than I on that one. But they did have that telephone line across the river from that Chaffin location over to a telephone line.
How did that work?
Close the ferry.
How did that work?
Well, it was just a telephone line, and I don't know about the electrical process, but Leslie still got one of those telephones.
Nice. So it must have had a little crank on the side, and
yes,
you would put it in your ear and crank it, and it would ring a bell somewhere. Nice.
There's such time they run that line down so my folks could hear it.
Okay. So that way they would know there was business. because otherwise they might be out working in the fields and they wouldn't know somebody had come along.
Yeah, working in the orchard and garden.
Okay.
There was no per se farm other than just a little bit of veggies.
Okay.
Mostly it was fruits, melons.
Must have been good eating when it was in season.
Yeah. Leslie, she's got one picture she should show you when we visited one summer. When she was just a toddler, I don't know, 2.5 years old, about.
She showed me that picture. It's the cutest picture. It's your three of your children there.
It's classic.
It just and they're holding fruit that's almost bigger than they are.
Yep.
And they look very happy.
Yep. But we did go down that way, visit, and that was during the early 50s.
Okay. Or the early 60s, I guess.
50s.
Okay. All right. Nice. What else do you remember about that time?
Well, I'm still racking my brain here.
Hmm.
Oh,
you're doing fine.
I do remember walking down on that east side one time and found a dugout. I only assume it might have been some prospector trying to mine for gold. And I remember it was dug out and boarded up somewhat of the dugout and on the made shelves. And I remember a bottle of peaches that I tasted that still tasted pretty good.
Wow, nice.
Hard telling how many years it had been.
Yeah. Huh.
But that the any gold. I can only just assume that even in the high, the Jack Miney was a very poor grade gold if there was any, and I don't think of any silver.
Yeah, it was a hard, you'd have to move a lot of dirt to make a very small living. That's neat, though, that you found a little dugout there, a little prospector's place.
But that was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like there might have been a dozen or so people living there.
On the west side, it was just the Chaffins, my folks, and then that one year where the Porters were there.
Okay. Okay, and then about that many again on the east side over at the mill.
Yeah, I really don't know how many people lived in White Canyon.
Uh-huh.
But it was nominal.
Hmm.
The only ones were just those people that worked at the mill.
And what did you do then with your career? Where did you go from there? Okay.
But I never used anything other than years later I spent about a year working for Dugway Proving Grounds. And then I was able to leave there and go to Boeing Aircraft.
Okay.
In Seattle, which I lived up there. More than 40 years.
Oh.
I met my wife.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And she was from, I don't know if I mentioned, she was from Idaho, Rexburg area, and living there with her family.
Okay.
And she had 10 children, and I had the 5.
Okay. Nice. Okay. So you moved a long ways away for working was that Seattle for Boeing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I worked during the Beaumont project. It was a missile project, but it was really never used. Other projects were much more accomplished than the Beaumont project.
Okay. All right. Gail, is there anything else you can recollect about those days at the Hite Ferry that might be good to talk about?
Well, there's one other. For a short time, on a small hill just to the west of the Chaffin location, up on top of the hill there was a government house built. And it was for a young engineer, I think, and his wife that lived up there for a short time, and they were assigned to measure depth of the river.
Oh, this was the USGS people.
Yes, and there was a cable symbol that went across the river east-west, and then there was a sort of a chair affair that was attached to the cable, and of course it would zing across and pull yourself back, type of a thing, and then they'd use the testing of the amount of filth in the water as well as the depth of the river.
Did you get a chance to ride across that thing?
No.
Okay. So there's a sad story around that couple.
I see.
'Cause didn't he drown?
I don't know.
Okay, that was a different. That was a little. I think that was 56 or 57.
Oh.
Yeah, that was later on. But thank you, because in the photographs, every now and then I'd see this house up on the hill. And I'd always assume, well, that must be where Chaffin lived. But it's not.
No, he always lived there next to the river in his cabin.
Okay. Was that a wooden cabin?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a wooden structure with a roof on it.
Okay. All right. What were the mosquitoes like?
None.
None. Nice. That's good to know. Sorry?
We had horse flies and flies.
Ah, the horse flies that were kind of slow that would land and bite you?
Yeah.
Okay. You could get them, but it hurt.
Yeah.
No, I'm tickled to death. Thank you so very much for your recollections of 70 years ago, the Hite Ferry times.
Uh-huh.
I really appreciate it.
But my mother, she was quite a collector of those rocks and small chunks of petrified wood that primarily. Quartz type material.
Okay.
And they had a lapidary process where they would run the fine grinding material that polished the rocks in there. I still have quite a collection of her polished rocks.
Oh, nice. Okay.
If you're ever up in the Utah County, I'm glad to give you some of them.
Oh, that'd be fun. Well, I bet Leslie's got her eyes on those.
I don't know about that one, but I'll try to remember to make sure she gets some of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I've given her some already.
Fun, Fun. Did your mom and dad, did they play musical instruments?
My mother was fairly good on the piano.
Okay.
My father, stepfather, he never had an instrumental.
Okay.
He didn't sing or he liked to dance.
Okay. Nice. Nice. Well, they, you know, all the photos I've seen of your folks there, they looked very happy. They looked very content.
Yeah, they were a very happy couple, very well loved and contented.
Nice.
Are you a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
I'm sorry to say, sir, I am not.
I probably, has any missionary ever stopped by anyone at all to give you a copy of the Book of Mormon?
Oh, yes, sir.
Have you read it?
Enough, but I better back away cautiously.
Well, that's okay. One thing about a person's own religious convictions, it's a very personal thing.
Yes, sir.
And a person throughout their whole life tends to their own achievement, their own salvation.
Mm.
It isn't a one-type thing.
You know who I was thinking about, which I'm going to mention, but you might not have met him, was a fellow named Bill Wells. He was a Mormon bishop, and he had a plane, and he was known as the Flying Bishop.
Yes, I've heard about him, and he'd fly in to White Canyon area there. There was that little airport there, yes.
Right, right. Yeah, he would have, I wished I could have done an oral history interview with him. I bet he had quite some stories.
I imagine.
Yeah, yeah, flying in that country.
My folk.
I bet they did. I bet they knew him well.
But I didn't meet him.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'll ask Leslie to see if she's got photos of Bishop Wells, because I bet he was there. He actually ended up doing a river trip, or got down in the canyon, and he married some people down there. But that's another story.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Gail Nielsen, thank you so very, very much for a wonderful hour recollecting Hite, Utah, and the wonderful days there. This will conclude our Grand Canyon Oral History interview. Today is Thursday, March 26th, 2020. My name is Tom Martin, and Gail, thank you so very, very much.